This episode might contain a few, okay, maybe a lot of book spoilers regarding the three books I read in 3 days, a flex. So if you don't want to get spoiled on like a specific book, when I start talking about the book, skip. Just start skipping like insane. And yeah, hopefully you don't get spoiled. If you do get spoiled, then go read the book. Go read the books. You're not going to be shocked anyways. So yeah. Another warning. So 7 minutes into the episode, I'm going to start talking about three psychological thrillers I read. And if you are familiar with psychological thrillers, they usually deal with like sensitive kind of topics. So if you're not really comfortable listening, I highly recommend you listen just to the first 7 minutes and then don't continue the rest of the episode. That's it. Hi, hello, hi. Welcome to episode 12 of the I'm Too Sleepy For This podcast. I'm your host, Jude, and today we are going to be talking about, like, a lot of things. You know, I've gotten into the vibe of, like, pure chaos in episodes, so now I have this goal in mind to make episodes more and more chaotic, so let's get into it. What should we talk about today? Okay, so I kind of want to elaborate on my last episode and kind of go more into detail regarding the two hyperfixations I mentioned. One, Genshin Impact. Let's talk about F1, because why not? It's, you know, I barely understand the sport. I did not even know it was considered a sport, but it is, and that's so cool. As it should be, honestly. I hear the drivers lose up to like 4 kilos in body, sweat, weight, matter, whatever. Stay snatched, I guess. I don't know. But I want to talk about the Australian race, which was my first race as like a quote-unquote F1 stan. It was my first race, and I was so excited. Like, Jonah, this one's for you. I was so excited for it, like, to the point where it was on a day I took an off from work. So I want to spend the day sleeping, but I had that alarm set for 6:55 so I could like wake up and catch the race. I literally woke up before my alarm went off, and I woke up energized and ready to watch the race. You know, who am I? I would never do this on a work day. On a work day, I literally turn off my alarm 6 to 7 times before I force myself to get up, get ready, and leave the house. But for this one, I was like, we're getting up and we're watching the race, and I did just that. And let me tell you, I do not regret it one singular bit, because for this to be my first race and the things that went down, insane. Like, this race was the first time in 2 years since Max Verstappen had to retire his car. Like, he was on a winning streak, and that all came to an end because his car, one of the wheels, caught on fire. So slay. Like, that moment when Carlos Sainz overtook him, I was up. So yeah, that was really exciting. And then just when I thought, I was like, what? Max DNF in this day and age? No way. And then Lewis Hamilton DNF. Then I was like, oh my god, what is going on? They both retired relatively early in the race. I think Max was like on lap 5 and Lewis was on like lap 17 out of like 50 or 58 laps. Insane. They weren't even insane. So that was so dramatic, and people noticed this pattern. Okay, so like I said, Carlos Sainz won the race, right? Every single race where Carlos Sainz has won, for some insane reason, George Russell crashes his car, and this time it happened at the last lap. He was on his last lap of the race. He crashed his car. I think he crashed it against like one of the borders, and then from the force, it rolled his car onto its side in the middle of the track. And there's like audios of him like begging the Mercedes team to ask for a red flag, because he was literally in the middle of the track. Meaning, like, if anyone was behind him, right? And they were going on a high at a high speed, and they see him in the middle. There is a high likely chance that they would literally crash into a soul and end it. But they did not. They were like, no. Like, the FIA were like, we know the procedure. We know how it goes. Carlos Sainz in the lead. George Russell is going to crash his car, and we don't care. We don't care. So that was really fun. That's it, honestly. I don't really know what to talk about. I really need to write an episode. I miss writing episodes. They were so fun. I used to do it at work, but So I hope you guys are excited for the episode I want to make about work, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to make it now. I have plans for when I want to make this episode, and it's not now. Oh, we're just waiting for something. Resignation. We're just waiting for something. Me quitting. We're just waiting for an event in my life to happen so that I can drop the work episode. And yeah, that's a really... What else? Ooh, you want to know what else pissed me off about the F1 race? And I don't care what people say, okay? So, the Australian race was Oscar Piastri's home race because, you know, he's Australian. And people were so badly rooting for him to get a podium, which is like in the top three. And he was there. It was Carlos Sainz, Charles Leclerc, and then it was Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri. But before it was that lineup, it was actually Carlos, Charles, Oscar, and then Lando was behind him. And the McLaren team told Oscar to let Lando overtake him and go ahead of him. And when I watched that, I was pissed. I was so pissed off. I was like, listen, I love Lando as a driver, but like, Oscar, he deserved a podium in Australia. And then I saw people were like, Lando was way quicker than Oscar. When you watch back videos, there was some distance between them, but whatever. Yeah. But I felt bad for Lando because when he got up onto the podium, some people booed him. Some people booed Lando Norris. That's just not. Yeah, that's it. The next race, I think, is in Japan in a few days. And it's also going to be really early. And I know for a fact after it, I'm going to have to go to work because I think it's going to be on a Sunday. Let me check. Like, I know, but we're going to check this together. Okay, hi. What you listened to so far was me recording the episode last week, and I'm continuing it the week after. So it's not the episode I had in mind, but I'm just going to leave that in because I yapped for 7 minutes. I'm not going to get rid of all my hard work yapping. So, but what I wanted to talk about in this episode specifically, like, I had this episode planned. I want to talk about books that I read this week, because this week I read 3 books in 3 days. Who am I? Who is this 2020 me? Who is this right now? And I am so shocked, but it all stemmed from me at work. I was like, I'm not gonna sit here and listen to music all day. Like, it's not the vibe, Ramadan, you know, it's not the vibe. I was like, why don't I listen to an audiobook? Because I had a subscription to Storytel, might as well use it. But I did not have a specific book in mind. All I wanted to read was a good psychological thriller, because if you know me, you know I love psychological thrillers, but all the ones I have read previously have sucked. They have been so bad. Like, yes, they put the psychological in psychological thriller, but like, the books were not that great, or did not end that great, in my opinion. And I'm not going to name the book I have in mind because a lot of people do actually love this book and it shocks me. I'm going to say that. What was the name of the book? The Silent Patient. I read that book. I paid a fortune for that book, Fjidid, with my own money. It wasn't my own money. Anyways. And I hated it. Like, it had me shocked. Do not get it twisted. I was so shocked reading the book, but the book overall sucked. Anyways, so I found the first book I found, like, someone recommended it on TikTok, and I am so cautious of taking book recommendations from TikTok, because if you've seen BookTok content, the people on there are mentally deranged, they're mentally sick, they're unhinged, and I do not trust these people with book recommendations. But people were recommending this author. Her name is Frida McFadden. And I was like, okay. And I found some of her books on Storytel and I went through them. And the one that caught my attention was a book called Never Lie. Now, out of the three books I read, spoiler alert, Never Lie is my favorite, even though I gave the book after a higher rating. But Never Lie was my favorite out of the three. So let me tell you about like a brief synopsis about this book. So the synopsis of the book is we have a newlywed couple, Trisha and Ethan. They are house hunting, and on the way to a house, a snowstorm starts, and by the time they get to the house, they realize that they're going to be trapped in the house for a couple of days because of how bad the snow is. The second they arrive, Ethan is like, oh my god, this house, Trisha, this is our house. Whereas Trisha's, they're like, this house is weird, this house is creepy, and she just does not get a good vibe from this house. Whereas Ethan is like, dream house, we are buying it. Anyways, so like I said, Trisha gets like these weird creepy vibes from the house, and as they're looking around, they find out that this is actually the house of a well-known psychiatrist who went missing like a year ago, and they never found her. Straight off the bat, we are getting bad vibes from this house. And Trisha decides to like look around the house just to see, you know, what the house has to offer. I don't know. She's trying to investigate the house, and she stumbles upon a secret room, which she discovers is the psychiatrist's office where she used to have sessions with her patients. And in the office, she finds like a bunch of tapes. Every single session the psychiatrist had, she recorded and, you know, kept them so that her excuse is that so she could review them before the patient's next session and be caught up and all of that. Anyways, so she gets this vibe from her husband that if she tells him about the tapes, he's not gonna be really pleased. So she decides to keep it from him. Speaking of Ethan, multiple times throughout the book, Trisha's like, I feel like I don't know him. I really don't know him. And they got married less than a year of when they started dating, and all of her friends are like, he is a red flag. But Trisha's like, no, he's a really nice guy. We don't like Ethan here, okay? So yeah, she starts listening to this tape, hoping to find out what happened to the psychiatrist, because like I said, the psychiatrist went missing, but she went missing a week after she released this best-selling book in which she talks about one of her patients, a girl called Patricia, who has PTSD because she was able, or she survived the offing of her fiance, her best friend, and another one of their friends. They went to this cabin when they were in high school, and somebody broke into the cabin and did their thing, and Patricia was the only one that survived, and she got PTSD from that, and she goes sees the psychiatrist to help her with those issues. So a notable patient that Trisha listens to the tape of is this guy called EJ, right? EJ is insane. EJ is crazy. EJ is a narcissist, or so the psychiatrist thought when she first diagnosed him. The psychiatrist, I forgot her name. I think her name was Adrian. Yeah. We're going to refer to her as a psychiatrist. It just makes things easier. So the psychiatrist tells EJ that she cannot see him anymore because no one's paying for his sessions. And what EJ does is he starts blackmailing her and threatening her into continuing his sessions, and that's what happens. And, you know, but what really caught my eye about EJ is when Trisha's listening to his tapes, she's like, EJ, he sounds really familiar, but I cannot put my finger on it. I'm like, girl, that's literally your husband. Girl, that is your husband. And the way EJ is described, because the book is in two points of views, it's in Trisha's points of views and it's in the psychiatrist's points of views. So the way the psychiatrist describes EJ is the same way Trisha's husband Ethan was described, but Trisha thought absolutely nothing of it when she heard EJ's voice. Things with EJ start getting really, really bad, like the blackmailing is so awful. So the psychiatrist gets her boyfriend Luke to break into EJ's house. And how do they do that? She literally knocks EJ out. She gives him these sedatives. She knocks him out. She gives his keys to Luke. Luke breaks into his house, deletes like all the footage that he has of her,
which the psychiatrist is convinced that this footage could ruin her life. And guess what the footage is? It's literally her slashing someone's tires. And she was like, this can end my career. Whatever. The problem is that when her boyfriend Luke saw the footage of her slashing a tire, he was like, you are evil. And I'm like, I don't know, car etiquette, I don't know. She slashed someone's tires, so what, go get new tires? I did not really see why the psychiatrist was so pressed about it. Whatever. Anyway, so, like I said, the thing with EJ starts getting really bad. The psychiatrist plans to have him gone. So she, again, as Trisha's listening to the tapes, the psychiatrist then confronts Patricia and is like, girl, listen, I know you're the one who did the massacre. I know you're the one who offed your fiance and your friends because he was cheating on you with your friend and whatever. And she was like, fine, you caught me, but you can't tell anyone. She was like, okay, you don't want me to tell anyone? Then do this favor for me. And she and Patricia plan to off EJ, and they succeed. And that's that, you know? And then suddenly, this guy called Luke, like I said, the psychiatrist's boyfriend, he breaks into the house that Trisha and Ethan are staying at because he did not think anyone was there. He's homeless now. He doesn't have a job because he was framed for the psychiatrist's attempt, like alleged offing. Okay. And yeah, they catch him, you know, they tie him up, and we find out that Trisha is actually Patricia. I was so shocked. I do not know how I was not able to put two and two together with the names. But yeah, we find out that Trisha is Patricia, and she's the one who had EJ offed. And we then find out that Ethan is the son of one of the psychiatrist's patients. And this patient, she was convinced, like, she was delusional. She was having these delusions. She was convinced that her son wanted to off her. And, like, with the thing with Luke showing up and all of that, Ethan finds Trisha listening to the tapes, and she confesses to him that she's done this and this and this and this. And then Ethan is like, listen, I pushed my mom down the stairs and this and this and that. And then together they conspire to off Luke so that no one will ever find out that the both of them were responsible for any of the offings that happened. Psychopaths. The both of them turned out to be utter psychopaths. So yeah, that was never a lie. The other book I read was called The Inmate, another Freda McFadden book, because I was on a binge of her books, right? Never a Lie caught me. I was caught. I'm telling you, three Freda McFadden books in 3 days, literally every single day. That was one book done. And I listened to the books on 2x speed, by the way. So the books are actually 8 hours normal speed. But if you bring it up to 2x speed, the book is actually, or like the three books that I read were like 4.5 hours, 4 hours. So life hack. And sometimes when I wanted to just speed it up and get to the point, I'd bring it up to 2.5 speed. Genius. Anyways, the other book I read was called The Inmate. And this book follows this girl. Her name was Brooke, who 10 years after a traumatic event happened to her, she goes back to the town she grew up in, and she was offered a job as a nurse practitioner at a penitentiary at a men's prison. Okay. In a men's prison. And who is in this men's prison? Her ex-boyfriend, who she put in jail because he attempted to off her 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, when I read the synopsis, I was hooked. This girl, Brooke, you know, she's in the jail. She's like, I really hope I don't see him and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, no shocker there. She does see him. And he tries to convince her that it was not him that attempted to, you know, that attempted to hit her. And in my head, I was like, listen, this girl was so stupid. Because in the notes that other doctors wrote for this guy, he's called Shane, by the way, they called him an extremely manipulative person. And he was able to convince Brooke that it was not him that tried to, but it was not him that tried to offer, but it was actually her best friend, Tim, who coincidentally bumps into Brooke 10 years later. They rekindle their friendship. They become friends. And yeah, we go through this book and Brooke is like, wait, I'm not sure that Shane actually did this. And what pissed me off is that for 10 years, she was so convinced it was Shane. Like the way she described it, she was so convinced it was Shane because she was like, and I felt this heavy body on top of me, pulling my necklace, trying to choke me to off me. But then she was like, maybe it was not Shane. And Shane was trying to tell her, like, when he was her patient at the jail, he was trying to tell her that, listen, girl, it was not me. It was Tim, your best friend. Tim, your scrawny, you know, your scrawny best friend. And slowly but surely, Brooke starts to believe him. And she starts, like, sussing out Tim. She's like, Tim is not right. Anyways, one day she goes over to Tim's house. She goes over to Tim's house. And she finds a body in his basement, and she calls the police, and she's like, she goes to the police and was like, this is the guy that tried to off me 10 years ago. It was not Shane. Shane gets released from jail, right? She gets Shane out of jail, and Shane has no place to stay. So Shane comes over to her house where he sees that Brooke has a 10-year-old son. And Shane was like, girl, wait, is that my son? Is that my child? And she's like, because she was stupid. At the jail, she did accidentally reveal to him that he has a 10-year-old son. I'm just saying. So, yeah, now Shane is out and about, and he's with her son, and they're bonding. But her son does not seem to like Shane. Her son is like, mm-mm. But Shane, on the other hand, he's so happy. He's finally getting to meet his son and bond with his son. But his son does not like him. And, you know, where they're like, why? I wonder why. Anyways, one day Shane was like, girl, listen, I can't keep staying at your house. I'm gonna go back to the old farmhouse. The old farmhouse is where the, you know, the offings happened. I'm gonna go there to renovate it and move there. And he was like, listen, Brooke, girl, you should come with me. And she was like, listen, dude, no, I have trauma. I'm not. But her son was like, mommy, I really want to go see this house with Shane. And then that's so she goes with them. Anyways, when they're in the house, she had this deal with Shane that they were just going to wait in the car. He's going to go snoop around, you know, check the house and come back into the car. But when they get there, he asks her son, he's like, listen, buddy, do you want to come down to the house with me? And Brooke is like, no, Shane, I told you no. And he was like, it's just going to be a few minutes. Anyways, they go into the house. They get inside the house and then, you know, they're cleaning, they're whatever. And then Shane was like, why don't we go out on a walk? Or it was either Shane or her son. Anyways, one of them was like, let's go out on a walk. And Brooke was like, no, I don't really want to go out on a walk. Then Shane was like, okay, fine, it's just going to be me and your son. And then Brooke was like, listen, no, no, I don't think so. And he was like, do you not trust me with my son, girl? Like, what is going on? She was like, fine, go. She's there, you know, they're out on a walk, and she's like waiting, and she's like, wait, they've been out for like a suspiciously long time. She tries to call Shane. He's like, I'm gonna off your son as revenge. I'm gonna off your son as revenge. You know, and we find out it was actually Shane all along, which is what I knew, which is what I suspected. It was not Tim. Like, he manipulated her into convincing her it was Tim, and she put Tim in jail. And then we find out, no, it was actually Shane this entire time. And his mother was conspiring with Shane. His mother literally changed her appearance, and she cosplayed as her son's babysitter. Like, literally, she had Shane's mom babysit her son for months, unknowingly that it was Shane's mom, even though she's met Shane's mom. But she was like, she changed her appearance so much. Anyways, and then Shane's mom pulls up to the house with a GUN. And she's like, I'm gonna take revenge on you, because how could you? And, you know, they go into like this lore. I'm not gonna get into it. Yeah. And then, you know, Tim gets out of jail, and Shane had like a freak accident when he was out with her son. And then in the epilogue, we find out that Tim actually warned Brooke's son. He was like, listen, dude, this guy called Shane Nelson, he might try to contact you sometime in the future. Just know he's a bad person who's gonna try to hurt your mom and hurt you. So when him and Shane went out on a walk, he saw it as his chance. They were standing like under this tree, and this tree had like a bunch of like these ice on it. So her son shook the tree so hard the ice fell on Shane, and Shane fell onto the ground unconscious. And then her son like goes close to Shane, and he realizes Shane is still very much alive. You want to know what her son does? Her son is 10, by the way. he grabs an icicle and just goes to town with it. Imagine. And what really, like, was, and it really, it was so shocking, because what really threw me off is, like, Brooke, a nurse practitioner, you know, she was like, and I always try to catch signs in my son of him being a psychopath, but so far, you know, I don't think he's going to be like his dad. I don't think so, girl. I don't think so. So that was the second book I read. The third book is yet another Freida McFadden book, and it follows a woman called Sylvie who gets hired by this man who I forgot the name of. Anyways, irrelevant. She gets hired by this man to take care of his paralyzed wife who's been in an accident, and he just needs someone to babysit her while he's working. So yeah, she gets to the house. She meets the wife. Her name is Victoria. And yeah, Victoria tries to lead Sylvie to her journal. Sylvie finds it. She starts going through this journal. And as she's reading this journal, she finds out the husband is not the man that he seems to be, like, towards Sylvie. He's, like, this really nice, caring guy who wants to give his wife the world. In the journal, however, he's this abusive, manipulative, toxic, overall disgusting and gross human being who treats his wife so, so badly. It actually hurt me reading those scenes of the way he treated her. It was painful to read, like, that's how bad it was. And while Sylvie is reading all of these really awful things that this man has done to his wife, Victoria, she falls for him. Are we shocked? Are we surprised? No, because Sylvie is the dumbest main character I have come across in a really long time. And out of the three books, she was the stupidest. And I thought Brooke was really stupid. Y'all did not meet Sylvie yet. Like I said, she's reading all of these things about the husband, and she starts to fall for him. And she's like, he is not like the way Victoria's writing him. He's so nice to me. Like, no way he threw Victoria's phone at her face. No way. Absolutely not. He's so nice. Sylvie, wake up. Anyways, so one night, Victoria tells her that, or tries to tell her that there is a G-U-N in the house. And Sylvie gets on this mission to find this G-U-N. Before the plot twist, Sylvie was on Victoria's side. Sylvie was on Victoria's side because she was like, oh, this poor woman, you know, and she was reading the journals and seeing how awful the husband was, yet she still chose to go out with him anyways. So she's on Victoria's side, and she gets her the G-U-N and hides it in her room. After that happens, Sylvie gets a call from the cook in the house, and the cook is telling her that, like, yeah, girl, Victoria was so abusive. Victoria would literally do all of these really insane, crazy things to her husband. She was so jealous. She was so controlling. She was so abusive. She was so toxic. She'd be an awful person to him. And then Sylvie was like, wait, what? No way. So Victoria's lying in her diary. Victoria's lying. And then Sylvie was like, oh my god, I gave Victoria a G-U-N. So she goes and she confronts the husband, and she's like, listen, sir, I gave your wife a G-U-N, and I think she wants to she wants to do her thing. And he's like, oh my god, Sylvie, I didn't want to tell you this, but I'm a victim of abuse. She used to physically and mentally harass me. She was so jealous of me, and blah, 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 blah. And when Sylvie gets this call from the cook, and then the husband confesses to her, she's like, oh my god, Victoria, she's lying. She's insane. She's gonna, you know, off us all now. So they want to go and get the G-U-N. But when they open the door, lo and behold, they're in her wheelchair. You know, G-U-N pointed at the husband. She's ready to take him out, as she should, my queen, okay? And you know what Sylvie does? Because she's so smart. She is such a genius. She lunges at Victoria. And this woman, this poor woman, she is shaking. She can't point the G-U-N straight because she is paralyzed. She only has one working hand. You know what Sylvie does? Because she's so smart. She lunges at her. And they lunge down the stairs. This woman is in her wheelchair. They fall down the stairs. You can only imagine what happened to the poor woman in the wheelchair. I'm not going to tell you. You can just imagine. But, you know, she's no longer with us. Yeah, and then, you know, we are so shocked to find out that Victoria was right. And her husband was an insane psychopath. And the cook, she was in on it too. Alhamdulillah. I'm telling you, I was not, like, listen. The inmate and the wife upstairs,
did not shock me. Like, okay, brief moments shocked me, but like overall, I knew who the criminal was at the end of the story, which really ruined the surprise for me. But I mean, it's a psychological thriller. I did get the psychological manipulation aspect of it, which I thoroughly enjoy. I love that. But as to who did it, it was obvious, except for in the first book. The first book was truly, truly, truly such a shocking book. I still think about the book because of how shocked. I mean, I finished it like 2 days ago, but 3 days ago, but you get my point. So yeah, that was like a brief, and maybe the first book was not brief because I really did love the first book. So if I spent too much time talking about it, it was out of my heart. I really like, I tell you guys to read the book, but anyways, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the I'm Too Sleepy for This podcast. I'm your host, Jude. Bye.